Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It's Thursday, the 6th of December, 2018. I am your host, Kelly Gamott. With me today is Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
And also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so today, I know how odd this sounds, but we're going to talk about Facebook. There's something kind of interesting going on with Facebook right now. In the UK, which is part of what we want to talk to Charlotte about, I know, Andrew, you had written a story, and Charlotte, you had reported on these documents that are part of this lawsuit in the United States ended up in the hands of the UK Parliament, and Parliament wasn't going to release them, and that has now changed.
So when I went and sat and looked at Facebook getting a grilling by the Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee in Parliament, in the House of Commons the other week, it had come on the back of them seizing some documents from a 643 executive. Mm-hmm. And then in that document, the chairman of that committee, who is a Conservative MP called Damian Collins, said at that stage the committee was not happy, was not ready to release those documents. And as you say, that has now changed. Those documents are now public. They're on government's website and they exist. And Andrew took a look at them a little bit yesterday. We've been looking at them more today. And it's pretty interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So, Andrew, what are some of the interesting things that have come out of this documentation? Which I know Facebook has basically said they can't believe this stuff is public because it was part of a lawsuit where it was under seal, and they sort of felt like the lawsuit was kind of illegitimate in the first place.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
And they made that point in the hearing, trying to discredit the guy who, from 643, they described him as a hostile litigant, basically.
Ah, okay.
They think he's not a credible witness.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, there was some guy who had these emails and, like, the government basically, like, cornered him in the hotel and forced him to mm-hmm. hand them over. So that's all.
Not the government. This committee of MPs, who are not the government, but yes.
Oh, okay. MPs, members of parliament, for people in the United States who have no idea how UK government works, like me. I think they threatened him with, like, if you don't give us the documents, you don't get to go home. Something like that.
I'm not quite sure, but he was, yes, that's how this story started, with some parliamentary officials arriving at this hotel, seizing the documents just before Lord Allen appeared in front of the committee.
Okay. So, Andrew, what's interesting in these documents?
Well, I had written about something specific. I can't remember if it was, I think it was last year, 2017, where Facebook had released this VPN app called Onavo Protect.
Mm-hmm.
And as it turns out, they were using this VPN to basically figure out what apps users had installed on their phone, which ones they were using the most, a lot of other data that the user had. Mm-hmm. And then Facebook would use this information to figure out which apps were their competitors. Uh-huh. And so they copied a whole bunch of features from Snapchat.
And of course, they're doing this on the low. They're not telling you, like, we want access to all of the information about all the apps on your phone and how often you use them.
Yeah. And Apple eventually kind of, but not really, force them to remove it. So it's gone from the App Store now.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's still on the Google Play Store, though. It might be.
Well, and Apple and Facebook, that's sort of a weird relationship, because it sort of seems like if Facebook needs something fixed in the app, it happens instantly. And if you are but a mere mortal App Store developer, that kind of thing has to go through a process and takes time. And, you know, you always hear stories from developers about being in App Store review limbo. you know, and different sorts of things that get apps rejected for one reason or another. You know, I think there was a story somebody told me about how they had, once we had seen the iPhone 10, but it wasn't released yet, somebody updated their screenshots to include the notch, and it got their app's update rejected from the App Store because the iPhone 10 wasn't released yet. So this person's trying to be current. We've all seen it. It's been at the event and everything, and then they got rejected. So there's all kinds of craziness with the App Store, and like Apple's relationship with Facebook in a bunch of ways is sort of weird. You know, you have the separate Facebook login and the iOS preferences, you know, and you can store your Facebook login information in there like you can with Twitter. And some of that is sort of weird. Now that this is released to the public, I think the thing that was sort of interesting about it was how it seemed like, at least at first, all of these documents and all this information were supposed to be super duper secret, because like going all the way back to this guy having them in the first place, because in the lawsuit in California, they were under seal. And the only reason this guy had access to any of this stuff is because he was part of this court case and had all of this stuff.
Yes. One of the other interesting things, which kind of links to what Andrew was talking about and was picked up by the New York Times, is this idea that Facebook basically gave preferential treatment to some of its partners and punished some other companies. So, for example, the New York Times says it helped Airbnb by giving special access to its platform, but others that it saw as threats were cut off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and by special access, you mean special access to information they had about users? Like,
yes,
user data and all of that. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about Facebook and Facebook granting access. What we're talking about is Airbnb got to look at way more customer data than somebody else that Facebook maybe didn't like as well for whatever reason.
That's what it appears to be. Am I right, Andrew? Does that sound right?
Yeah, and there was evidence that Facebook's refusal to share some of this data with these apps caused them to just completely fail. So they wrecked these companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not just the app, but the company, by not being able to get at this information in some way, as opposed to a company that did have it.
Congratulations to the UK for uncovering this and forcing this to be released.
Yeah, I'm interested in what... I have a feeling I know what, but I'm very interested in what was the impetus for all of this to be under seal in California. And I think, like so many other things this year, it's because Facebook got a good look at it. And this is just, I think, I don't know for sure, but it certainly appears as though Facebook probably got a good look at this pretty serious information and didn't want the world to know it. And that's how it ended up under seal. So I'm glad it did finally go public as a result of Parliament. So Charlotte, over there, what has this meant for Facebook or for Parliament? Are they going to try and get an actual Facebook executive over there to testify about any of this? Or have you heard more about what the next steps are there?
Lord Allen is a significant Facebook executive. And yes, of course, what they really want is... they want Mark Zuckerberg in front of the committee. That's what they really want. Mark Zuckerberg responded yesterday in a Facebook note saying that the documents published mostly include discussions leading up to changes we made to our developer platform to shut down abusive apps in 2014-15. He basically thinks it's an internal discussion. Really annoyed you made this public.
Of course.
And look, the specifics and anything else, not what Facebook needed at this time, is it?
Well, I mean, it never is. what I'm wondering about...
Given the scrutiny they're under, given the criticism Zuckerberg and Sandberg are facing specifically, it's adding to the problems, isn't it?
Yeah, and what I wonder is if continuing waves of this, particularly in the UK, are going to cause Mark Zuckerberg to have to go there and testify. Like, if, I mean, this just keeps, it keeps happening, and it keeps not being good for Facebook. That hole just keeps getting deeper, you know? And that's why I'm sort of wondering, like, there, is there a renewed call for him to come and testify, or
not yet? But that's mainly because MPs are in the middle of 5 days debate about Brexit.
Okay,
so basically nothing else is happening.
All right,
but that doesn't mean after the Christmas break, don't see renewed calls for this.
Yeah.
I really liken it to, if you guys remember, Murdoch being called in front of the kind of previous iteration of this committee. And it's kind of as you described, Kelly, it kind of, he didn't want to go, but stuff kept happening, more and more stories kept happening, and eventually he ended up in front of this committee. And frankly, it became a bit of a... it was a bit of a show trial. He was attacked by someone in the audience. It was a high profile event, and it became, it did become a bit of a show trial. If I was Mark Zuckerberg, I'd be trying to get to London as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and then get it over with, because there's bigger stuff happening in the UK right now than this, and so. You know, he could get in and sit there and say, gosh, we're really sorry. And, you know, all the kind of non-answers he keeps giving Congress when he talks to them. And, be done with it. You know, check that box.
This stuff, the bigger it becomes, right? The more you doing it, the bigger deal it becomes when you eventually have to do it.
Yeah.
Of course, there's just one final element before you probably want to move on from this topic. Facebook recently hired Nick Clegg to lead its kind of global communications team.
Mm-hmm.
He's a former MP and a former Deputy Prime Minister of the UK.
Okay.
That's another element. Does he end up turning up? What's he advising? I think his role, we haven't really picked up on his role in all this yet because he's so new to the company.
Sure.
But actually, you've got someone who was a very, very senior parliamentarian and government member now sitting at the top of Facebook, which is kind of a dynamic, perhaps.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, especially, once we get the opportunity to take a good look at once the documents have been out there a little while longer and more people have gone through them and found any other sort of information in there that maybe we need to know about. I'm curious where this is going to go and who's going to end up in front of Parliament getting grilled about this. I'm somebody will. I'm very curious who. So thanks for covering that. And we're going to now talk about our sponsors. And our first sponsor is Ops Genie by Atlassian. And Ops Genie is here because incidents are inevitable. Like, no matter what, you're going to have an issue. It's going to be some sort of outage, whether you've planned it or whether you haven't. And getting those timely alerts is super duper important. And that's where Ops Genie by Atlassian comes in. Ops Genie makes it so that your dev and op teams can plan for service disruption and stay in control during those incidents, either planned or unplanned. So the teams have the power to respond quickly and efficiently, and the right teams are the people who are getting notified of all of this stuff, thanks to integrations with things like Jira and New Relic and loads more. So if you go to opsgenie.com, OPSGENIE.com, you can sign up for your free company account and you can add up to 5 team members. Our other sponsor today is Jamf Now. I keep telling you guys about it. Jamf Now is awesome for tech support season, as I call it, which is this part where everybody has devices and you go visit them, or you start, you get there and everybody has a question about their new device because now you're home visiting people, or people get new devices, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad or maybe even a new laptop or an iMac for Christmas, and want you to help them get it all set up and running. And one of the easy things you can do is just enroll those devices in Jamf Now. It supports macOS devices, iOS devices. You can keep track of what version of operating system is on them. You can set up a wide variety of settings. You can add Wi-Fi credentials or email settings or loads of other information. And on their website, three devices are supported for free forever, and additional devices are $2 a month. So if you head over to jamf.com, jamf.com/TDO, you can sign up for your free account today. And I highly recommend you do so. Our other topic today is, Andrew, something that you wrote about that I think is terribly interesting. Some folks might remember that you mentioned this briefly on the show when we were talking about some basic privacy stuff. And you mentioned having set up a service called privacy.com. So let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I've talked about privacy.com a couple of different times, but that's just because I think it's such a useful tool. And I think it's a good idea for people to be aware of this now that we're coming into the holidays, because online shopping is bigger than ever. So basically what privacy does, once you link your bank account to it, you can use it to generate basically a near unlimited number of these virtual credit cards that you can use for anything online.
Okay.
So it's really handy.
So for online shopping, then you can create different credit card numbers that all tie back to the same original account.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there are a couple of different types of cards that you can create. So there's one where it's a burner card, mm-hmm. and you can set it to like automatically get deleted after you use it the first time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's another card where you can link it or lock it to a specific merchant. So the first time you use it, it just locks to that merchant and it can't be used anywhere else.
Okay. So you only have like an iTunes credit card number.
Yeah. So I have like one for iTunes, one for Amazon, etc. And I wouldn't be able to use the Amazon one for something else.
Okay. So then if somebody were to get a hold of information from iTunes, or somebody were able one way or another to crack into somebody's Amazon account, if they were to take that credit card number and try to use it somewhere else, it's not going to get them any place.
Mm-hmm. And if you do find out that maybe you're thinking that your information was leaked in one of these many data breaches, you can pause or cancel the card and just create a new one.
Oh, wow. That's much easier than having to call the credit card company, or worse, when the credit card company does it for you preemptively, and then you just get a letter that says, hi, you're going to get a new credit card soon. Then it's much easier if you get control over that. Now, another one that I know people use sometimes is Square Cash, because it's not so much that it's disposable, but it's sort of prepaid, because you can't use a Square Cash credit card unless you have Square Cash behind it. So if you have the Square Cash app on your phone, like, you know, that you can use to send money to people here and there, if you have that, they do have the option within the app where you can create the credit card number and you can use that just like any other sort of credit card. But they also have an option where they will mail you the piece of plastic if you want it, and then you can go and swipe that different places. So
that's cool.
That's an interesting option. And one of the nice things about it is that you can manage it through the app on your phone. So you can just go in and go, yeah, throw another $20 on there. Or I think you can tell it, like, stop using the cash card. So the same sort of thing. Like, if you find out somebody might have access to that number, you can just disconnect that number. And then it makes it a lot easier to manage at least that piece of it. And sometimes with the Square Cash stuff, it's kind of handy to have it that way.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I wish privacy could have, like, send you physical cards too, but then you might end up with this stack of them on your desk if you want to use, like, one for every store.
Yeah. Which credit card was that again? Then you have to, like, label all of them. I wonder if you would be able to hook them up with the smart you know, the credit cards where you can scroll through and like, it's this kind of card. I think Dave Hamilton had one or ordered one, like coin or something like that. And then it's got the little battery in it. Yeah. So I wonder I wonder if you could hook up to those. One thing that I do personally is I try to use Apple Pay everywhere. And part of the reason I like to do that is because, much like privacy.com numbers, when you set up Apple Pay on your phone, the credit card number that's attached to your Visa card or your MasterCard or whatever it is not the same as the number on the credit card in your wallet. So you get this sort of imaginary card that is tied to information from your Touch ID and your Apple ID and your bank. That's why there's that authorizing piece that happens when you set up your credit card, is because it's your phone is negotiating with the bank, and between them they come up with this token that includes this fake credit card number. So even if somebody were able, I know, I think with NFC transactions, the sniffable distance, the like how close somebody could be before they could snoop on that transaction, it's something like 6 inches or something. And so like with RFID tags and stuff, you know, you see things about people being able to read like RFID tag stuff from far, far away. And this is not that. So this is like 6 inches away. So even if somebody were 6 inches away and able to get the credit card number out of that transaction, it wouldn't do them any good, because it's not a legitimate credit card number unless it has this authentic token that includes information from the secure enclave, whether that's Touch ID or Face ID that you use for that, and other pieces of information that are specific to that in that transaction in particular. So it's actually a lot safer if you're paying with your phone or if you're paying with your watch. And particularly if you pay with your watch, you get the opportunity to feel like you live in the future.
Yeah, that's awesome, because I actually didn't know about that, the distance part, so it can't be scanned by someone.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I also really like about being able to use Apple Pay, is I think the transaction, the sniffable distance is like 6 inches. So somebody would really have to be in your personal space in order to get to do that. And honestly, if somebody is that close to you during that transaction, I feel like you may have other issues. Or that person, like, if you're that close to somebody while you're paying for something, there's a very good chance that person has the same credit card in their wallet too. So it's not like they really want to, you know, get in on that transaction. So those are some things that I like to do. But, you know, I also like to just wave my arm over the thing and be like, I've paid now. Thank you, Parker's Hardware, for having Apple Pay. So shout out to Parker's Hardware, because I have told them this is why I shop here, is because you let me wave my arm on the thing and then I've paid. I hope Apple Pay gets more prevalent in a lot of places, because I don't think you have a lot of opportunities to use it, right?
No, I wish I could use Apple Pay more, because I don't know. I think it's just because I live in kind of a small city and there just isn't really a lot of places I can use it.
But oh, okay.
It would be so helpful, because like I have this happen where I was at the grocery store and I forgot my wallet. So I pulled up my phone and I'm like, do you accept Apple Pay? And they're like, no, sorry. And I'm like, oh.
You know, that happened to me once. I was headed to the store and I got to the store and it was the same sort of thing. I got there and went for my wallet, and like I had left it in my backpack and I had my purse with me or something, and I was like, oh no. And then I'm like, oh wait, and I gave it to them. So it was pretty funny. I was like, oh no, this is, oh no, wait, this totally works. And so then like on the way home, because I could, like I opened the Starbucks app and got a cup of coffee on the way home, because I was like, oh wait, I don't need my wallet for that either. And so I was like sort of excited that I had, that it hadn't impacted me really, that I left my wallet at home. So I was kind of excited about that.
Nice.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that's pretty great. Now I think with privacy.com, those are Visa cards, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That was the other thing I wanted to make sure that people know, because I Apple Pay information, if you're using Apple Pay, I believe that's done through Discover. Through the Discover card service. So like if you're using Apple Pay, you know, within Messages or Apple Pay Cash, I think they call it, where you can like load up your Apple Pay card with money. That's done through the Discover system. So don't try to swipe your privacy.com card at the Diners Club terminal is what we're saying. Yeah. So, yeah.
Privacy.com is also free too. They say on their website that they make money through merchants. Oh. I'm assuming they might just take a cut of each transaction. So
okay.
Hopefully we won't have to worry about them like selling and collecting our information.
Yeah. I glanced through their stuff and they're not interested in any of that. It sort of reminds me of, like you said, with Apple Pay, there's just a little piece of the transaction that goes to the company that makes that mm-hmm. happen. And it doesn't impact the price of anything that you're buying. You know, if you spend $10, you're still spending $10. And a little yeah. piece of that goes to this company. And maybe more companies will get on board with that, because anything that anyone can do to make it so that they have to issue less cards at a time probably yeah. would be pretty great. So I would say... you know, anything that makes that happen is a plus. So, and having dropped the Diners Club reference, I'm going to go ahead and call it a day. Since I got in my old timey deep cut there. So, I'd like to thank Charlotte for being with us today. And also thank you, Andrew, for coming by and talking to us about privacy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for today. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. And until then, be excellent to each other.